I'd like to do two readings for you. The first one comes from Romans chapter 12, verses 17 through 21. And I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version, the updated edition of that. Hear these words. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it is dependent upon you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink, or by doing so, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. I also want to share a quote with you from Desmond Tutu, who says, we must not allow ourselves to become like the system that we oppose. We cannot afford to use methods of which we will be ashamed when we look back, when we say, we shouldn't have done that. We must remember, my friends, that we have been given a wonderful cause. The cause of freedom. And you and I must be those who will walk with heads held high. We will say we use methods that can stand the harsh scrutiny of history.
This is Guns N' Roses.
Look at the lies we swallow, and I don't want.
Service. I bet you didn't see that one coming. That was fantastic. I would have never put that together, but man, what a wonderful song to share with us. Thank you for that. My message this morning is entitled MLK and Creative Loving Resistance. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. proclaimed, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Well, I am here to tell you it may bend towards justice, but it does not bend gently. It bends behind the sweat of the brow, creativity of the mind, and love from the soul of those who believe that every living being, not only desires justice and equality, but has a right to it. You see, justice is not a passive pursuit. Justice is not a passive pursuit. The moral arc will not bend without encouragement. Dr. King was a living example of the kind of person who encourages the moral arc of history to bend towards justice. He's also an example of the only effective way to bend that arc: non-violently. See, we cannot hope to bring about justice by an unjust means. As King says, hate begets hate. Violence begets violence. Toughness begets a greater toughness. We must meet the forces of hate with the power of love. It is far too easy to believe that achieving true justice through active nonviolent resistance is just sort of a pipe dream. That it is a lovely concept, but that it is mostly ineffective when placed within the context of the modern realities of power and dominance. Well, the reality is that nothing could be further from the truth. The reality is that active, non-violent resistance simply doesn't capture the vast majority of the public's attention enough to sell ads and commercials. So the majority of big media groups sort of ignore it and underreport it. We can just look at the Reverend Dr. William Barber's massively underreported moral march on Washington just last year to see the reality of that. And it may be that another reality is that this kind of change-making, this kind of peace-making, this active non-violent resistance is such a threat to the industrial war machine and those who leverage fear and violence and hate in order to continue to propagate their positions that they will do everything within their power to prevent the mass distribution of reports that point to how effective it truly is. As Mahatma Gandhi reminds us, non-violence is the greatest force at the disposal of mankind. It is mightier than the mightiest weapon of destruction devised by the ingenuity of man. I mentioned Walter Wink before. If anyone's interested, I do have some books here that I'd be willing to lend you. Author and theologian Walter Wink helped us to see that not only is the idea of violence being redemptive a myth, violence, as Dr. King pointed out, begets violence, but there is a better way. He called it Jesus' third way, which is also the name of a small publication that he wrote in the 1980s to show a way to non-violently resist apartheid. And in it, Wink points out, he says, in 1989, there were 13 nations that underwent non-violent revolutions. All of them, except for one, China, were successful. That year, 1.7 billion people were engaged in national nonviolent revolutions. That's a third, that would have been a third of humanity, or nearly that at the time, he says. If you throw in all of the other nonviolent revolutions in all the other nations in the 20th century, he says, you get an astonishing figure of 3.34 billion people involved in nonviolent revolutions. That is two-thirds of the human race. No one can ever say again that nonviolence doesn't work. He says it has been working like crazy. This begs the question, though. What does this look like in everyday life? How do those of us who are not Dr. King's or Gandhi's or Walter Wink's begin the work of bending the arc of the universe towards justice while honoring this call to nonviolence? Well, to answer that, I'd like to share with you a story. It's a true story of the Ku Klux Klans. It happened in Knoxville, Tennessee. A book about it called White Flower was written by my friend, singer-songwriter, peace activist David Lamont. And yes, it is a children's book. But let's face it, we're all a little bit of kids at heart. So I'm going to try to cue this up. It is actually read by David, the author himself.
The day was gray and sunny, as most May days tend to be in the hills of Appalachia, down in Knoxville, Tennessee. A dozen men put on their suits and quickly took their places in white robes and those tall and pointed hoods that hid their faces. Their feet fell down in rhythm as they started their parade. They raised their fists into the air, they bellowed and they brayed. They loved to stir the people up. They loved when they were taunted. They didn't mind the anger. It's exactly what they wanted. And as they came around the corner, sure enough, the people roared. But they couldn't quite believe their ears. It seemed to be support. At Knoxville finally seen the light, were people coming around, the men thought for a moment that they'd found their kind of town. But then they turned their eyes to where the cheering had its source. As one, their shoulders crumpled when they saw the mighty force. The crowd had painted faces. And some had tacky clothes, their hair and hats outrageous. Each had a bright red nose. The clowns had come in numbers to enjoy the grand parade, and they laughed and danced that other clowns had come to town that day. And then the marchers shouted, and the clowns all strained to hear, each one tuned in intently with a hand cupped to an ear. White power, screamed the marchers, and they raised their fisted hands. The clowns leaned in and listened, like they couldn't understand. And then one held up his finger and helped all the others see the point of all this yelling. And they joined right in with glee. White flower, the clowns shouted. And they reached inside their clothes. They pulled out bags and tore them. And huge clouds of powder rose. They poured it on each other and they threw it in the air. It got all over baggy clothes and multicolored hair. Now all but just a few of them were joining in the jokes. You could almost see the marchers turning red beneath white cloaks. They wanted to look scary. They wanted to look tough. One rushed right at the clowns in rage and was hauled away in cuffs. But the others chanted louder, marching on around the bend. The clowns all marched on too, of course, supporting their new friends. "White power," came the marchers' cry. They were not amused. The clowns grew still and thoughtful. Well, perhaps they'd been confused. They huddled and consulted, this bright and silly crowd. They listened quite intently. Then one said, "I've got it now." "White flowers," screamed the happy clown, and all the rest joined in. The air was filled with flowers, and they laughed and danced again. Everyone loves flowers, and white's a pretty sort. I can't think of a better cause for people to support. Green flower stems went flying like small arrows from bad archers, and white petals covered everything, including the mad marchers. And then a very tall clown called the others to attention. He choked down all his chuckles and said, "Friends, I have to mention that what with all this mirth and fun, it's sort of hard to hear, but now I know the cause that these paraders hold so dear." "Tight showers," the clown blurted, as he hit his head in wonder. He held up a camp shower, and the others all got under. Or at least they tried to get beneath. They strained, but couldn't quite. There wasn't room for all of them. They pushed, but it was tight. "White power," came the mad refrain, quite carefully pronounced. The clowns consulted once again. Then a woman clown announced, "I've got it. I'm embarrassed that it took so long to see, but what these marchers march for is a cause quite dear to me." "White power," she exclaimed, and all the other clowns joined in. They shook their heads and laughed at how erroneous they'd been. The women clowns were hoisted up on shoulders of the others. Some pulled on wedding dresses, chanting, "Here's to wives and mothers." The men in robes were sullen. They knew they'd been defeated. They yelled a few more times, and then they finally retreated. And when they'd gone, a kind policeman turned to all the clowns and offered them an escort through the center of the town. The day was bright and sunny, as most May days tend to be, in the hills of Appalachia, down in Knoxville, Tennessee. People joined the new parade. The crowd stretched out for miles. The clowns passed out more flowers and made everybody smile. And what would be the lesson of that shiny southern day? Can we understand the message that the clowns sought to convey? Seems that when you're fighting hatred, hatred's not the thing to use. So here's to those who march on in their big red floppy shoes.
That is nonviolent resistance. Was it inspired by the teachings of Jesus? I have no idea. And it really doesn't matter. What matters is how they resisted hate and domination. They did not respond in kind with hate and domination that was aimed at the other side. They took aim at the silly idea that one race is more important than another, and they let their sharp wits fly in a barrage of puns and general silliness. The reality is that non-violent resistance is actually part of the founding of the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't horrific violence in the founding. It just means that part of the U.S. founding is actually built on non-violence. You see, the American colonists initiated three major non-violent campaigns against the British. Against the Stamp Act of 1765, Townsend Act of 1767, the Coercive Act of 1774, and collectively those played a major role in the independence of the colonies, of the nine colonies in 1775. The reality is there is example after example of this kind of resistance working. Non-violent demonstrations led to the passage of the ratification of the constitutional amendment guaranteeing women the right to vote. Using a variety of non-violent methods, including boycotts, economic boycotts, massive demonstrations, marches, sit-ins, and freedom rides, the U.S. Civil Rights Movement won passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Apartheid in South Africa was brought down in 1990 through a series of non-violent protests and mass resistance. As Dr. King once reminded us, at the center of nonviolence stands the principle of love. So, following in the footsteps of people like Dr. King, let us march on, bending the arc of the moral universe towards justice. It will take the sweat of our brow, the creativity of our minds, and the love of our souls if we hope to sort out a nonviolent way forward. But we must never lose sight of the reality that nonviolence is the only actual way forward.
So this song is like a, I look at it like a prayer. This is a Coldplay, like 10 years after Guns N' Roses. Me trying to sing like two men today, Axl Rose and Chris Martin. Stevie Wonder and James Taylor.
Open up your eyes.
been showing all these books. So I'm going to show my book of progressive prayers. That's what I'm going to be using for this period of our worship service as we gather together. Turn a little more inward. This is a prayer for my book. I'll ask you to accept it in whatever form is best for you, as a meditation, as a prayer, or just a moment to grab hold of the words that you're in need of right now. Let's bow our heads. We have heard the words of the prophets instructing us to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly. Let us turn our hearts and minds to places in the world where those things sometimes seem difficult to come by. In the struggle for justice for all, in places around the world where there is civil unrest and violence, as people call for change, may justice prevail in a way that no one is left behind and no one is taken for granted. In our efforts to love kindness, we are reminded of the divides that the judgment from churches can, has, and continues to cause. May loving kindness be extended not only inside the walls of the church, but in a way that it is extended to everyone outside the walls as well. May we learn humility. May we learn not to feel as if we are more deserving than anyone else. May we stop judging others because they don't agree with us or for not doing things the way we would prefer. May we be reminded that living lives of love in action is part of the prescription for a world where no one must suffer. And may we be inspired to begin doing that even more fully today. Amen. See this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and actions bring that love and happiness to all you meet.
Dr. King loved this tune of Charlie Parker's.